You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Eiliat.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, nu spicudeci cora, nu spicudeci cora. Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, nu spicudeci cora, se nu mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are in Eilat, in the Hotel Herod's, sitting on a wooden terrace, overlooking a swimming pool. It's about 8:30 in the evening, and it's still very warm, isn't it? It's been overcast all day and pretty warm. Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to see the Red Sea, because by the time, we haven't finished work and it's dark.
we saw it. It's there.
Yeah, I was hoping for a bit more of a glimpse. I was hoping we'd get down to our hotel, which looks
well,
out.
I've got a nice day by the Red Sea tomorrow.
Yeah, I've got a very early flight to Sicily, mm-hmm. and I don't currently have my plane ticket, which is one of a number of things that have caused just a little bit of anxiety.
Well, we've
today.
Had a stressful day. This is partly down to us, partly down to the Giro being in Israel, and partly down to just the Giro being the Giro.
Mm. Yeah, to
and,
feel
and bringing elements of Italy here to Israel.
Yeah, well, to fill people in, normally what we would do is drive to the start, and there'd be an arrow pointing us to the PPO, which stands for, in French, point d'accès obligatoire. What does it stand for? It basically the point where everyone has to get into the race bubble. If you've got a sticker on your car, you are allowed into that area, and then once you're in the bubble, you're in the bubble, and you shouldn't really go too wrong. Today's stage, going from Beersheva to Eilat, was 229 kilometres, and really there was only one road. The race was taking that road, all of the race traffic was taking that road, so what we knew was we would have to get to the start well ahead of the race, get ahead onto the course, and then drive the entire route of the stage ahead of the bunch. Well ahead of the bunch and arrive here and Eilat in good time. But when we got to Beersheva, we saw no signs for the Giro at all. And we were, we made a wrong turning and we got stuck in a big traffic jam.
Couple wrong turnings, stuck in a traffic jam. Took emergency action, didn't we? We left the road. We went off road. We did a Lance Armstrong.
We did. We went across a field, muddy tracks. I was very uncertain
anxious,
about doing that.
Anxious.
I thought it was a bad idea. I could visualise us having a puncture
there were
or something.
Three of us in the car. Tom Kerry from the Telegraph was there as well. It wasn't very democratic, was it? Because it was two to one against going across the desert.
But you were the one saying, let's go across the desert. So in true Buffalo fashion, we did what you said.
And it was the right thing to do.
It was the right thing to do.
We made it by the skin of our teeth.
We did. And then we drove the entire course and we arrived in Eilat and we saw the sprint finish. But this evening has been similarly kind of chaotic. The press conferences were so late after the finish today. I really don't know why. It was a good hour and three quarters before Elia Viviani, the stage winner, came in to answer a few questions. I'm flying on one of the RCS flights direct to Catania tomorrow, and we're supposed to have collected our tickets this afternoon, but they're still not ready. There's some hold up. So our plans are...
Our plans. We were going to have a special dinner tonight as well, weren't we?
We were. It's your birthday tomorrow, and you're... I mean, the problem here is that I don't know what will happen to the three-tier cake with 40... plus candles on. What will happen to that?
A few
now?
For good luck there, are there? No, look, it was interesting to drive the stage today. I mean, it was a desert, so there were pockets of fans, but it was interesting just on the outskirts of Beersheva, the little communities of Bedouin people living in huts, basically. These are not recognised as villages by the Israel government. They don't have any kind of services, no running water, no electricity or anything, but they're allowed to live there, and they are, you know, nomadic people who've lived in the desert for many, many centuries.
Shall I recap the day and then we'll
do.
Get on with talking
one other
about
little
it.
Thing about Beersheva, we met a guy from Israel, Gabi Pell. He lives in Jerusalem a couple of days ago. You'll hear from him in our episode of Kilometre Zero game on Monday, but he messaged me to say Beersheva is the site of recently commemorated the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Beersheva, the last great cavalry charge when the Australian Light Horse Brigade, I take it, charged at the Turks in 1917 towards the end of World War I. There you go. Didn't look that up on Google.
No, well, good, good. Well, the tale of the Tapa then, stage 3 of the Giro from Beersheva to Eilat, 229 kilometres. A couple of familiar faces in the breakaway today. Guillaume Boivin of the Israel Cycling Academy team, Enrico Barbin of Bardiani CSF, and Marco Frapporti of Androni. Well, he wasn't in the break yesterday, but the other two were. So far, so formulaic. They had a long old ride. Help with a tailwind at times. It was pretty lumpy. Elia Viviani said 2,000 metres of climbing over the 229 kilometres, so by no means flat.
But there was a rider ahead of them, wasn't there? Did they catch him? Team Sky.
I wasn't sure whether we were going to mention this. Well, we saw Team Sky's principal, Dave Brailsford, out on the road riding his bike. We saw him on a hill, didn't we?
Well, the hill. It was the worst spot from his point of view for us to see him, because he was... It was quite a tough hill, wasn't it?
Yeah, and a fan in an Israel Cycling Academy t-shirt was running alongside him. I wound down the window. I was going to shout something to him. I wasn't sure what. Are you going to resign, Dave? what's the latest with Froomey, Dave?
What's your reaction to the DCMS report? No, we didn't ask him any of those questions. We drove past him, but he does that most days. He rides a good chunk of the course, of all the Grand Tours, in fact.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't in the race, though. Let's not forget that. He was
reeled in. He was reeled in by Rod Ellingworth in a car.
As were the three breakaway riders. And, an anticipated sprint finish is what came to pass. Quite interesting finish, because they obviously had a howling tailwind until about 1.6 kilometres to go, and then an absolutely dead U-turn, and then some roundabouts. A tricky finish. Elia Viviani of Quickstep won his second stage in a row. He never really looked troubled. Sam Bennett, the Irish rider from Bora Hansgrohe, he was in front at one point, but then did make a move to the right-hand side of the road. Viviani talked about that in the press conference. He said he didn't want to make too much of it because it didn't cost him the win.
Because he won. Yeah.
Because he won. But he did have to touch the brakes and go again, and there was a brief touch of shoulders. But Bennett, for his part, after the finish, basically said he went far too early, and he gave Viviani a free win. He said, how many times have I led somebody out to win a stage of the Giro? And I was totting up his finishes. He's third in Haifa yesterday, third today behind Viviani and Sasha Modolo. And last year in the Giro, he had a second and three third places as well, Sam Bennett. So very, very close, but no cigar as yet. The only move in the overall places is that Victor Campenaerts was one of a number of riders who lost contact on the fast run-in. He slipped down from third overall down the standings, so everyone else
outside
behind
the
him
top 10.
Shifts up a bit.
Poor old Campenaerts. Say, we heard from a colleague of ours last night that he's been desperate to get the pink jersey, a little bit too desperate on stage two after, you know, riding very well in the time trial, but he apparently brought a pink bike with him here to
Tempting
Israel.
Fate, that, isn't it?
To wonder where that is. What's that? Very sad, kind of poignant. It's
one of the lotto,
just a pink bike abandoned.
One of the lotto fix-all mechanics is probably sandblasting it back down to the original carbon, ready for a respray.
No wonder he's cut such a...
But this is one of those questions, isn't it? When a rider gets a jersey, whether it's the pink jersey or the yellow jersey in the Tour de France, and they wheel out the frame the next day and the handlebar tape, all of that stuff has been prepared. So it's a bit harsh to say he's being presumptuous, but you know, shows a certain confidence and a certain level of expectation. But no pink jersey now, certainly not now he's lost a minute and plus.
He's not lost a minute plus, he's lost 30 odd seconds.
30
yeah.
plus.
But I agree, it doesn't look likely. The pink bike will remain in storage, maybe wheel it out next year. I didn't mention Cannondale, Education First last night, but Sasha Modolo made a bit of a mess at the end of stage two. He kind of delayed too long before jumping, and then his lead-out man, Tom Van Asbroek, seemed to be in his way more than a kind of effective lead-out. Today, much better. And he was really well supported. It was a fantastic ride by Van Asbroek in particular to keep him up there, because Quickstep took real control of that finale today with all these roundabouts. And we'll hear in a moment, actually, from Davide Bramati, their sports director, and Michael Mercou, as we remember when he was Lantern Rouge at the Tour de France, and we were given a bit of an education how to pronounce his name. His first year at Quickstep, he's been a really useful asset for Viviani as lead-out man. But in the finishing straight, he was looking around a lot, looking for Viviani, because Viviani had dropped back a little bit at that point, which he likes to do. And he's not one of these riders, because up until then, it looked very much a kind of high road style lead out with four or five riders on the front, really in control. And they went much earlier today than they did, obviously, at the end of the stage into Tel Aviv. So they did a fantastic job. And I, as I say, I spoke to Morkov and Bramati at the finish. Let's hear first from Morkov and then Bramati.
Another successful day. It was obviously very windy out there, but the last few kilometres, quick step and a lot of numbers at the front. You really took control of that.
Yeah, we did exactly like we planned this morning. We wanted to have the control at the, all these roundabouts. And when we first hit the front with such a strong guys like Schachmann and Stierbar, we had it all under control all the way to the finish line.
That's what it looked like. You certainly came to the front much earlier than you did yesterday. Was that because of the technical run-in?
Absolutely. With a run-in like this, with all the roundabouts, you have to sit in the first 10, maximum 20 position. I bet it would have been pretty hard to be in a 20 position all the way through the roundabout. So that was our advantage, and that showed how strong we are as a team.
Viviani did seem to lose the train a little bit towards the end, but he's one of these sprinters who maybe doesn't need a lead-out man so much, does he?
I think he needs a good team to support him, but it's true that he's a very athletic sprinter. He can really come from a small bunch, and I saw that he was drifting a bit back, and that's also why I just pulled out after the last corner to leave his components at the front.
How are you enjoying being part of this team?
I'm enjoying it very much. I'm very happy to be a part of this team, and I'm very proud to be a part of such a successful 2018 so far.
Tough end to this stage. Your guys hit the front very early. Was that the plan, to try and take control?
Yeah, in one moment we put Cavagna because we knew that was a full tie wind. And then I think everybody knows about 11 roundabout in the last 6Ks, and we take the decision to enter full team. I think the team did a amazing job also today. We lose Sabatini a 5Ks to go because he flat tired, but okay, we won. The team is very happy.
There seemed to be a lot of talking on the radios. What were they saying to you? What were you saying back to them?
Yeah, because road captain is Morkov. When Sabatini flat tired, I said to Morkov, watch out, you wait. Lucas, Viviani, you are last man today for this. And then he said in the radio, okay, and was perfect. I think he looked behind in the last 300 meter, and we knew that was 250 head wind, and then the last 80 meter only tailwind. I think the team did a good job.
You've worked with a lot of top sprinters on the team. I mean, you've had most of the best sprinters in the world on this team in the last decade. How does Viviani compare to, you know, Kittel, Cavendish and so on?
I'm very happy. I won in the past five stages with Cavendish in Giro, for last year with Gaviria. We won a five in the Tour with Kittel, and now Viviani. We want him last year in the team, and now he's with us. He integrated very well in the team, and all the team support him. We are here for this. Also today, Schachmann is a white jersey, did an incredible job also for him, and we will see. Now we enjoy the first two stages.
Finally, who's quicker, Gaviria or Viviani?
Two fast riders. They have a different sprint, but we are happy the bot is with us.
Yeah, Quickstep have got the sprints in the bag, haven't they? Look at their tally from last year's Grand Tours. This time last year at the Giro, Fernando Gaviria won four stages. At the Tour, Marcel Kittel won five. And at the Vuelta, Matteo Trentin won four. None of those riders are on the team now. They've obviously signed Elia Viviani from Team Sky this year, and he's slotted right in. And, you know, he's taken now two wins. A bit of a gap before the sprinters will have another opportunity, probably not until Praia Amare on stage seven, but he's off to a flying start in his bid to try and win the Ciclamino jersey for the points competition.
A San Francisco.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. A few more of you have been tweeting or Instagramming pictures of you in your Pedaleur de Charme t-shirts or jerseys. A little reminder that we're running a competition, well, two competitions. One is to find Pedaleur de Charme for week one. Please message us however you can. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, email, contact at thecyclingpodcast.com. Give us your nominations for Pedlar de Charme. We'll be awarding that towards the end of the week. They will get, the lucky rider will get a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt. We've got a selection of prizes, though, for you from Rafa and Science and Sport, our other sponsor, to give away during the Giro. To enter the competition, just retweet today's episode and add a comment to say why you listen to the podcast. We've had some quite good ones in today. I listen to the second podcast to learn more about cycling and a lot more about food and wine, says Rory Kyle. Thank you, Rory. Shawnee Boy, I always listen to Send Me Off to Sleep. Never fails, usually about 9 minutes in. That's a shame because he'll actually be asleep now. So he'll have missed his shout out. I enjoyed also David Miller, not the David Miller. This one is at the Big Chip, whatever that means. I listen to the second podcast especially for the in-pod adverts. Mind you, some couldn't be more cheesy if they were for Wensleydale Creamery cheese. And Wensleydale Creamery actually liked that. So if you're listening,
sponsorship deal in the offing.
Advertising is available.
Yeah, and Wensleydale, a very nice cheese. They can have that one for free.
Well, I'm looking forward to when I go home briefly from the Giro tomorrow. You do have some adverts to run while I'm away, and I'm looking forward to you and Daniel doing that with aplomb.
We will. We will.
Excellent.
Well, it's what keeps us on the road, isn't it?
Richard? It is, Lionel, absolutely.
So,
business head on.
Yeah.
Now, you went to the Rowan Dennis press conference. He obviously defended the Maglia Rosa today.
Yeah, I did. And he made the point that, well, somebody made the point in a question to him that it's the first time that he's actually successfully defended a leader's jersey in a Grand Tour. Lost it at the Tour de France the next day, having taken it on the opening day in Utrecht. Lost it last year, of course, after BMC won the team time trial. But yeah, there were a few interesting comments from Rowan Dennis. Obviously, the big question is how far into this Giro can he go? Their stated aim was to try and win the pink jersey and take it back to Italy, which they're now going to do. But there's a sort of touch of the Dumoulins about him, isn't there? In the sense that people will obviously look at what Dumoulin has done and say, well, is Rowan Dennis a sort of rider who could go on the same track? But Dennis made the point that this year it's not necessarily about the overall result, it's about finding out what his weaknesses are in the Grand Tours. He said that even if he loses time, he's going to carry on racing as if he was defending the jersey. And that's a kind of the way that riders get their way into the top 10 overall. I mean, Bob Jungels has done that in the past, hasn't he, having held the pink jersey and then held on for a good result. He was also asked about the start in Israel and whether it, you know, matched what his expectations were, and he said he was really surprised by the size and the enthusiasm and the knowledge of the crowds. That was the main thing. And then that logically led on to a question about the big start being so far away from Italy, and he did make the point that the riders very much would have preferred to have finished a bit earlier today and have been on a flight back to Sicily tonight, so that they may have a very late night, but they would at least have a full rest recovery day tomorrow. Instead, a lot of them are up pretty early tomorrow flying and then trying to get back into the rhythm of things before Tuesday's stage. He said that he wouldn't want to travel more than 5 hours on a inverted commas rest day, and when you think about that, that would rule out a future Giro start as far away as Japan or New York, which are the next kind of frontiers, I guess, for the Grand Tours to try and reach.
Look who it is, Lionel.
Well, no Giro, but fortunately Giro is here.
Not only I'm here, but with my mind, I'm here with all of you. Physically speaking, in Israel. Mentally speaking, with all of you in Great Britain, France, Italy, Australia, everywhere.
I thought you were going to list every country in the world.
Richard, maybe it's too much. I don't think so, because as I told you before in our last occasion, well, nowadays everyone is doing his podcast. Also, maybe a former rider as Lance Arm. I don't remember even his name, Lance. Dear Lance, I'm sure that your podcast is good, but I can assure that our podcast is better.
Wow. I mean, is this like an advertising slot, or is this actually an
annoying? Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually, Lionel. Giro, your first. Well, we've seen you running around, busy as ever. You've been waiting for Elia Viviani. He's been keeping you waiting. That's not an elephant in the background, by the way. It's a lorry.
Elia, this is not fair from you because I haven't written one line yet for tonight, and then Richard, my wake up tomorrow will be at 4:20 a.m. in the morning. So, listeners, you can imagine how is hard my life.
But a good start to the Giro for Italy. The Giro isn't in Italy yet, but a good start to the Giro for Italy with two stage wins for Elia Viviani. The other man here, who we haven't spoken about yet at all, Fabio Aru, but one of the favourites. Any news on Aru? How is he?
Well, I mean, maybe in the first-time trial, maybe he thought to lose some seconds less. I mean, he lost 50 seconds from Dumoulin. Maybe his prediction was around 35-40. But we have also to consider that maybe he was a little bit scared before in the morning in the Recon, some riders as Froome, as Lopez and Siutsu crashed. And so maybe he took less risks. But in any case, in these two stages, he didn't lose time. So for the moment, his balance is sufficient. Not more, but sufficient.
Do you have a sense of how the Giro in Israel has been received in Italy?
Well, as usual, when the Giro doesn't start in Italy, also in Italy there is a question mark why it's called Giro d'Italia, why the start is not from Italy. But as a clear tendency all of Grand Tours to start sometimes from abroad. This has been historical for the Giro and all for Grand Tour because it's the first start abroad, outside Europe for a Grand Tour. So I think that this news, I mean, has been appreciated also in Italy.
This is getting unusually serious, Ciro, but has this been a success from RCS's point of view? And do you think it's been hinted that it could be a precursor to taking the Giro maybe to America or even further afield? What do you think that this visit has increased the likelihood of that happening?
I think so. And already in the past, there was the idea to try to start the Giro from United States. There was also a talks about Tokyo. I mean, for the moment so far, it's not, in my opinion, it's not a moment very, very near. I don't want to say it, for example, for sure, next year Giro doesn't start from New York. But in few years, question mark, why not? But listeners, just to be clear, I prefer you.
We'll speak to you more in Italy, Ciro.
I'm looking forward to this.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products fit get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to our other sponsor, Science and Sport, for keeping us on the road, as Lionel says. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products. We've had some very nice emails, actually, recently from people just saying that they use this code regularly and they appreciate it, which is nice to hear. I know a lot of people do use it. We get feedback from Science and Sport that it's popular, so that's nice to hear.
We've had an awful lot of messages on Twitter and Facebook and emails directly to us, and we have been reading all of those. But while we're here travelling around, it's very difficult to reply to everyone, but we do see all the messages, and perhaps once I get home from the Giro, I'll work through our email inbox in particular and give everybody a reply.
Yeah, we've had a few that we need to reply to, and we will get around to it. I should give you that code, having picked it up, at SISCP25 at scienceofsport.com. A couple of other little bits of business. Talking about Elia Viviani's stage win, should have mentioned Max Schachmann and Zdeněk Stybar, who were phenomenal, really, in that closing sort of, well, over the final sort of 5-6 kilometres. You know, they, as I said earlier, it was a high road style bossing of the lead out. They really, really were completely in control. They were quite narrow roads, lots of roundabouts, which made it difficult for other teams to move to the front. But it was very impressive. Schachmann in particular, he's been a bit of a revelation this year, and he's in the young riders jersey here. So certainly one to watch. Another one to watch from from Quickstep.
Yeah, and while we're talking about teammate support, one rider I spoke to after the finish was BMC's Kilian Franchini, a young Swiss rider, 24 years old, riding his second Grand Tour. He started the Vuelta last year, didn't finish it, but he's here, and I asked him what it's like working for Rowan Dennis and defending the pink jersey successfully.
We always had the breakaway under control, and then once over the Coem, the other guys from Quickstep and from Villiers came and helped us, and then we went a bit too short to the breakaway, but then we let them go again, and yeah, in the final all was good and Rohan stayed in the front with the first group.
A new experience for you, how did you find it?
Yeah, it was good. I know already from some races in Abu Dhabi I made the same for Rohan, riding at the front, so it was nothing new for me, but for sure it was a good training for me, and yeah, at the end I was still in the first or second group and I'm coming, so all good.
What's Rohan like as a boss?
Yeah, he's very kindly and he gives good advices, and he's very friendly and he really is kind for the help, and he say 100 times thank you, so really he really appreciate the work, and yeah, he's a good boss.
So Lionel, our time in Israel is coming to a close. You're off to Sicily tomorrow, I'm back home to London for a bit, and then I'll be joining the Giro again next week. We overlap a bit. Daniel will be flying out to Sicily tomorrow to join the Giro. I actually caught a bit of the Tour of Yorkshire today on TV after the Giro stage finished. It looked fantastic. Great crowds, a really good race. Dare I say it, more interesting stage today in Yorkshire than there was here in Israel. But that was entertaining. But we reflect, I suppose, on these 3 days. We'll do that at greater length and depth in our episode of Kilometre Zero, which goes out tomorrow for friends of the podcast. Become a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com. It's the first of 9 episodes of Kilometre Zero. And this one will just mainly be, we'll be hearing from people who live here, riders, a couple of Palestinian cyclists as well, who we've been able to speak to through Stephen Tunstall, who is a friend of the podcast, who's been taking part in an alternative Giro, I suppose, over the last few days. And that's really great to hear their perspective. But let's hear a little couple of clips here from two of the interviews that appear in that episode. The first one is Sylvain Adams, who is the Canadian billionaire who now lives in Israel and is a man behind the Israel Cycling Academy, and he's the man who brought the Giro here. He's the honorary president of the Big Start in Israel, and Lionel spoke to him in Tel Aviv. And we also hear from George Bennett, the team Lotto NL Jumbo rider, New Zealander, who's here with overall aspirations. Just very brief clips from both of them. Sylvain Adams first, and then George Bennett.
Is this your first time in Israel? So, what do you think about this place?
Well, it's not what I was expecting, but I don't know what I was expecting.
Okay. So this is exactly, you know, people I think are first-time visitors like you are pleasantly surprised. They see a country that's open and beautiful and democratic and free and safe. And we're basically inviting a billion first-time visitors via their television set to see Israel, to see the real Israel.
Yeah, no, you can't deny that there is this crazy underlying tone of Palestine is sort of like noticeable by its absence, if you know what I mean. There's just no sign that there's a whole other country.
Yeah, I mean,
which is a little bit weird and a little bit disappointing. I would have liked to have seen some acknowledgement and some, but it's just kind of flags everywhere. But you know, that's only if you read into it and you really look under the cover. I mean, for the rest of it, it's actually you know, it's a nice place if you take it at face value.
Two interesting points of view there. We spoke to people who live here in Israel as well. And, you know, we've talked about this at some length, and we've had a lot of feedback on the way we've covered it as well. And thank you for that. It doesn't lend itself to simple black and white analysis at all. It's so hugely complicated. Everything is complicated about it. But as I say, in this episode, we've tried to just include a range of views, and hopefully it all helps to fill in the picture a little bit. But two very interesting ones there from Sylvain Adams. And you challenged him, Lionel, because some of the things he said were quite contentious, I think, and you challenged him on some of it.
It's very, very difficult, though. I mean, we grew up in the UK during the time of the Northern Ireland Troubles, and you know, I wouldn't have presumed to be an expert on that, and yet that was part of our sort of daily, weekly news cycle throughout the 80s, really. And this issue is not simple. It's a long-term thing. There's an awful lot of history. And all we could really do is try to reflect as many sides of that discussion as possible. And as I said, after our day in Jerusalem, I thought that coming here would in some way help me come to some kind of conclusion. But actually, all it's told me is that coming to any kind of conclusion is almost impossible at this stage.
Mike Woods makes the point in the episode that, you know, they also race in China, in Abu Dhabi, in Qatar regularly, and you know those places are, you know, have very, very serious human rights questions to be put to them too. And when races have been held there, it hasn't seemed to be the same magnet for discussion that Israel has been. I think that's because a Grand Tour is something a little bit different, and maybe if a Grand Tour started in Qatar somewhere, we would have a similar discussion. But I really don't know.
Yeah, there's some interesting things here. First of all, I've always thought, and I have said on the podcast in the past, you know, the kind of watershed was when the international sports community basically decided that it was fine to have the Olympics in Beijing. And some people said that was terrible because it was endorsing China's poor human rights record. Others said, well, it was shining a spotlight on that human rights record, and people who perhaps wouldn't have known about it would pay attention or learn a bit about it. And others said it might be a catalyst for change. And I can see all of those points of view being valid. Last year, we did our ethical report into the World Tour team sponsors, didn't we? And that was a tricky one to do. It was Daniel's idea to do that. And we discussed all of the World Tour team sponsors and made the point about, you know, Bahrain and UAE being states which, if you read their Amnesty International reports, are not, you know, they're not squeaky clean. And yet those teams are directly funded by those governments, effectively. And you could say similar about Astana, because it's a consortium of state-owned or state-invested industries. And so when people say, oh, keep politics out of sport and so on and so forth, I just think that is absolutely impossible. When you have a particularly thing like a bike race, which is all about borders and, you know, the geography of somewhere, and here in Israel, geography is politics. That's exactly what it is. The two are inseparable.
Somebody also sent us an essay they'd written about the maps that have been produced for each of the stages here in Israel, and the things that are omitted from those maps. Really fascinating. And we'll maybe talk a bit about that in the Kilometre Zero episode as well. And you know, when we're talking about sport and politics and sports events being held in controversial places, I recommend a book, The Billionaires Club by James Montague, which is really about football and about, you know, in particular the way that workers are treated in the UAE and places like that. And James really travelled around those places and met a lot of the people working in awful conditions, and it's a really fascinating insight, and it's a murky, murky world.
Well, just one last point. We asked a colleague of ours who covers football, and I remembered when England and Israel were drawn in the same group in the European Championship qualifier. I mean, just to put that in context, Israel have to play in the European groups for the World Cup and European Championship qualifiers because they can't play in they can't play against their Middle Eastern neighbours because, well, politically they just can't. So they play in the European groups, and I asked whether there was any ill feeling or discomfort or ill ease, rather than ill feeling, about England going to play in Israel. I think they played in Tel Aviv, that match. But of course, the difference there is that the draw for the groups threw those countries together to play a match, whereas here, RCS has made a very deliberate decision to come to Israel. So I kind of get that distinction as well. I understand that.
Lots to chew on, and I think our visit here will leave an impression, and certainly given us a greater insight into this place. And it's not a contradiction to say that it's been an enjoyable 3 days as well.
It's been fascinating.
You know, Tel Aviv in particular was, you know, I went for a run this morning along the beach, and yes, but cities on beaches are wonderful, aren't they? From San Sebastian to Nice to...
Well, it felt very like Nice to me.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, and we can't pretend to say.
No offense to anyone in Blackpool.
We can't say we've seen the whole of Israel, but we've seen what we've been shown, if you like. And I think it's important to recognise that as well, because the race has very deliberately not gone anywhere really contentious. You know, I think it's important to acknowledge and recognise that fact as well, because it would be disingenuous not to. But we said we wouldn't go on about this issue too much in tonight's episode, because we've got the Kilometre Zero coming tomorrow.
Well, you'll hear from other
tomorrow.
People in Kilometre Zero, much more interesting, with much more interesting views than us.
True.
Lionel, before we go, you were going to just mention your most recent French special, because it was... it was a search for the Pink
Yeah,
Panther.
Well, it's a rest day tomorrow, so there's no race coverage, so people will be bereft. Bereft, I tell you, at our absence for 24 hours. But there'll be the Kilometre Zero and also the most recent Friends of the Podcast special. It's called In Search of the Pink Panther and an End to Belgium's 40-year Grand Tour drought. And it's basically, I went on a kind of wacky two-day trip to Belgium in search of a man called Johan de Moink, who people may not know much about, but he is the last Belgian to have won a Grand Tour. And during the making of this episode, I had quite a surreal lunch with Roger de Vlaminck, and we found out all about the llama he does or doesn't own.
We focus on the classics. We're boiling in our own fat. Ronde van Vlaanderen, Gent-Wevelgem, Paris-Roubaix. If you can win them, you can make your whole year.
Every restaurant in Belgium is owned by someone who was a domestique for Eddie Merckx. I've upset him already. He wasn't a domestique. Roger de Vlaminck, I've called Roger a domestique already.
The fans used to have bumper stickers with Roger's picture on it, and they all came to his home to throw these bumper stickers into his garden.
I could have gone to ride with Merckx, with Bitossi, with Zilioli. I could go to all those teams. But I chose him, with the understanding that I would be a domestique in the service of de Vlaminck.
Wow. This is a piece of cycling history, isn't it?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I mean, you don't get much more iconic than a pink jersey with Bianchi on the front. Daniel Freeb will be devastated, because it's one of his best stories is that Roger de Vlaminck keeps a llama, and I always believed him.
Search for the Pink Panther, thoroughly recommended. I lulled a lot through that. Lionel, we should head off, because I don't want that birthday cake to melt.
No, you have high hopes for this birthday cake.
Are we going to close tonight's episode with a little rendition? That's kind of traditional,
isn't
it?
I can't even claim now that for rights reasons I can't sing Happy Birthday. So here we go. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Della nacca con l'acqua rovina, ci gira nella delle buongiardine, della